Welcome to episode 5 of Your Hearth at Home. My name is Tara, and I'm so grateful that you are here. Today, I have the absolute pleasure of speaking with Elise de Villiers, a Vedic astrologer, homeopath, and nature worshiper. She talks to us about all things sky-related today, from the moon and how to work with the lunar energies throughout the phases, to the difference between horoscope or Western astrology and Vedic astrology. She also debunks for us the Mercury retrograde and explains what it actually means. Elise describes completing natal astrological chart readings for her clients as a starting point for them to find clarity on timing around things like relationships, career, and what moves to make when in life. I am so grateful to be able to share her amazing knowledge with you in this space. I hope that you enjoy. Welcome back to Your Hearth at Home. My name is Tara. I am your host here, and I am here today with Elise de Villiers, a Vedic astrologer based in Vancouver. It is so good to have you here. Thank you for joining me.
So good to be here, Tara. Thanks for asking me.
So tell us a little bit about what you do.
Okay. Well, you know, this word astrologer, it's pretty loaded. So what I would love to humbly say is that I do spend a lot of time in study with the Vedas, with the Vedic astrology specifically. And what it is a form of the karmas, feeding us with the language of our karma, believe it or not. That is what this whole practice of astrology is about, is how spirit comes into form through karma. And karma just means action. So we actually, I look at the chart and I'm reading a symbolic language, but it is very accurate to mathematics and very accurate to the living sky. So yeah, that is what I do, is I read these charts that are now so beautifully, you know, we plug in the date, time, and place of birth into a computer system. It spits it out. I mean, our elders, our ancients, they spent hours and hours painstakingly plotting this out, you know, imagine with a pencil and a paper, whatever they were using at the time. So just incredible. It would take hours, probably days, to do one chart. And now I can spit out a chart in about 10 seconds. So, you know, so blessed to be in a time like this where I don't have to cast a chart. It's just there for me. Yeah. And I have the ability from training, you know, lineages and lineages and lineages who've kept these teachings alive, but actually have been written down in the Vedas. So very blessed to have that in my life. So I do that. And then that's my night job. I actually like play with the stars at night. By day, I have a normal job, just like everybody else, but I work in the natural health world. Mm-hmm. And so I work with plants and herbs and nutrition and all those beautiful things that are, you know, keeping us healthy every day. And I've got a background in homeopathy and herbalism. And so this is beautiful daytime working with the plants and the earth, and nighttime working with the sky. And then I weave in some ceremony, specifically cacao ceremony, which is how we connected.
Yeah.
Cacao, and then some other beautiful shamanic forms of ceremony. So, yeah.
Beautiful. Oh, beautiful. When I was preparing for this interview, I read on your website, you had written as above, so below. Mm-hmm. And that just hit home for me so much, about the power of the sky.
Yeah.
And so true. Yeah. And just so perhaps you can tell us a little bit more about, you know, why is that as above, so below? What is astrology all about? And how can we use the power of this knowledge in our practices, just in our daily lives?
Well, it's really interesting. The path, specifically of Vedic astrology, has really changed my personal spiritual viewpoint. It's given me a grounding and a willingness to surrender Because prior to that, I was, you know, really understanding that I had will and control, and then I could make my own path in life. And that, and we can to a certain degree, absolutely, because we all have a spectrum of expression. Mm-hmm. So what happens, what my understanding is now, which is so powerful, is that in Sanskrit, they actually call the planets the grahas, and graha means to grab. And so it's this force of nature. It's not just a rock, you know, circling out there. It's actually a being, a force. And these forces are known to grab the soul and bring it to incarnation here on Earth. And so the actual moment of birth, place of birth, date of birth, lays out a map of exactly the placement of each individual graha or planet in the sky in that one moment of birth. And then what we have is literally a map. Because from that moment of birth, we can calculate at which point in time each planet will give their karmas to that person. And this is one of the differences between Western horoscopic astrology and Vedic astrology, is that there's actually a timing system in Vedic astrology that tells you when each planet will give you its karmas. And the karmas are basically what we have accumulated over lifetimes and throughout this lifetime. You know, we tend to think of karma as you do something bad, you get something bad. You do something good, you get something good. But it's not so black and white in India. It's this idea of just good and bad is there's really no judgment about these actions, because it's all about the soul learning. And well, we get to know that the sun is the representative of the soul. And the sun, we think of it, it just burns all day. It rises and sets every day, whether we like it or not, whether we want it to or not, whether we thank it or not, it just keeps giving its love, keeps giving its light, you know? And like that, our soul is the same thing. It doesn't really care if we get a great life or what we think is a great life. You know, they say that sometimes it is just such a gift to be human. It doesn't even matter if you're the poorest of the poor or if you are living a life of hardship, because you actually got a life as a human being. Like, use it to your best ability. And there's no judgment on that. There's no judgment on whether you've got a good life because you have wealth or you have a bad life because you don't have wealth. So it's a very different way of looking at life from the West. And so this really helped settle my personal spiritual quest, because, you know, it's always torn and twisted with, oh, well, what am I supposed to be doing? And who's just supposed to decide this? And then the chart really helped me to say, oh, okay, here's the life that my soul chose. I don't have to try and prove it in a human form. Yeah.
Interesting. So a key then in your practice is that initial is that like the only reading that one gets, and then everything is kind of based on this birth chart?
It's a good question. So natal chart, I mean, one reading is about an hour on average. It can go longer. Some people choose to do 2 hours off the bat, but really a natal chart is just to help you navigate as to how you identify and how your tendencies may be. Some people are very specific. They want to know about career, relationships. I usually recommend doing a career reading, a relationship reading, because there's so many intricacies in the chart about how we personally relate, yet what we're actually being called to do. Often the habits we have, the type that we pick, has nothing to do with what would actually help our soul evolve. So once we become aware of what the soul is actually looking for in the other, then we can actually apply that and stop looking for our type and start to just accept the one who will come and help us evolve the most, right? It's the same with career. We're not here to look for the most money. We're here actually for the soul to evolve itself. For some people, career is literally be at home and be with the family and raise a spiritual, whole, loving family. For other people, it is actually about being alone. This lifetime is about being alone and forging your own path. You know, so sometimes career is not even in necessarily the chart for you. And so why make the pressure? You know, it's quite liberating to find out what's actually there. And often there's a part of the soul that hears the words and awakens and goes, oh God, yeah, that's the thing I've been forgetting. Yeah, it's beautiful. I had a person recently whose whole family was pressuring them to be somebody and to make all this money. And I looked at the chart and I said, I'm sorry, man, you're an artist through and through. Like, I don't know how else to tell you this. If you're not creating and if you're not making things with your hands, I don't know what you're going to do. And he said, oh my God, I've been trying to please my family for 40 years and all I wanted to do was my art. So, you know, I don't know what that means for the rest of his life. Hopefully at least he picks it up and he does a little bit of art here and there, or maybe he turns it into something. But we also have this pressure in the West to turn all of our loved things into a career, into a moneymaker. And that's not the way it's meant to be. Sometimes you're just supposed to use your hands to create things because it's good for your soul. It's because your soul wants to create with your hands, not because you need to make money. So it's a very liberating path because it's the end result isn't always about achieving this great status or this impact on the world that everyone's going to be impressed with. Yeah.
Oh, beautiful.
Yeah.
Wow. So that brings us then to current situations and how things evolve, you know, day to day, month to month. So today we move into a new moon. How does that come to affect our charts, or how does that affect us?
That's a great question. So one of the most important things about astrology is initially when one gets involved, the best thing is to actually have a birth chart reading and get to know yourself from that soul perspective, from what the grahas, the planets, have to say. But then as one starts to dabble and play and get to know more, what's actually the most important thing is what's live in the sky today, because all of us are going through the exact same thing at the exact same time. And this is the part that I love, it where it teaches us that yes, we are unique individuals with our own map, our own birth chart, but we're also experiencing all together in a collective on a daily basis, minute by minute. We're all experiencing the same things together. So when the moon goes into newness, we all experience the new moon. When we experience it in a particular sign, the sign is the emotion, the feeling of that moon. And today it's in a watery moon. It's in Pisces. So a lot of people will feel sleepy and daydreamy and they can't quite get their feet on the ground. And they're like, oh, I don't know why. I just can't think today. But it's because the mind cannot think today. It wants to liberate. And if you actually let yourself daydream, the insights will be profound. Today is a day for dreaming. Today is a night to go to bed early and keep a dream journal by your bed. Each new moon will have this different vibe. If you get into a fire sign, energy is going to move quickly. There's going to be sudden inspiration, but it's not this dreamy, watery. It's going to be quick and swift and burns up rapidly and lots of energy. And then if it goes into an air sign, like a Gemini or an Aquarius or a Libra, you end up with the movement of wind, but it's intellectual. It's in the intelligence. It's in the ideas realm. Mm-hmm. And then if you move into an earth sign, it's much more tangible, practical. And, you know, you can feel a very sudden, like, groundedness. So if you learn to work with how the sky changes, you actually know what energy is at bay for you and what most likely will happen. Like today would be a really hard day to force people to really be grounded. You know, it would be wise to maybe sit by a tree and ground yourself, but today's really about going out and, you know, trying to capture some of these inspirations that we can't normally access. So giving ourselves time, if you can't do that at work, at least let yourself do it at night when you're off, you know?
Yeah.
That's really how we work with the living sky.
Okay. And then the living sky, so that is a global effect. So yeah. Everyone's in the same boat at the same time.
Well, we have the northern and southern hemispheres.
Right.
So those two things are also in effect, right? Because they see the sky differently in the southern hemisphere. We're just going into our springtime, but in the southern hemisphere, they're just going into their autumn.
Right.
So things are, and we do have to take that into account. If I'm reading for someone in Australia or Peru, I have to take that into effect. And these amazing computer programs, of course, spit out a chart for the right area, the right hemisphere.
Oh, interesting.
But then also, if the new moon happened, it happened actually this morning at 3:30 a.m., but we're still in the energy. It happened here at 3:30, but if you live in Toronto, it would have been at 3 hours later, right? So it would have been at 6:30. So, you know, if you're in London, England, or again, if you're in China somewhere, it's going to be a different time in every time zone. But yes, we are all affected by that being a new moon cycle. Or if there's an eclipse, we're all experiencing it, but in different parts of the world at different times, right? So there is a visual experience that's different. But yes, I mean, Saturn, a very slow moving planet, is affecting all of us in the same sign at the same time.
Gotcha. Yeah. Okay, perfect. Thank you. Okay. And then on that note, in terms of just differentiating information, when I'm a big follower of the moon myself, and I often come across different information from different sources. So I'm wondering your thoughts on why that would be and where one, in your opinion, should go for reputable information in your field of astrology.
So here's the thing. There's two zodiacs that are really being worked with out there. And in the West, we're really used to the tropical zodiac. And that's our typical Western astrology, okay? It's working with a zodiac that's about 24 degrees off of what's actually happening in the sky today. Mm-hmm. And it's a whole calculation that's based on trying to get 0 degrees Aries to the vernal equinox. So I won't elaborate on that. It's technical, but it doesn't line up with today's sky. So what's so nice about sidereal zodiac, which is what I work with in Vedic astrology, is that if you look in the sky and you look for the dot that's the planet, the dot will be in the constellation right now today. And if we go back to the day you were born or the day a 90-year-old was born, two different skies, the dot will be in the constellation. Whereas the tropical zodiac, you have to add another 24 degrees. So it's often, you know, there's only 30 degrees to a sign. It's often outside of the sign already. Mm. So that's why sometimes you'll hear, oh, but I've always been a Pisces. How can I be an Aquarius now? Well, it's because you're using a tropical zodiac that's 24 degrees off. If you weren't born at the end of Pisces, chances are you're an Aquarian. So it gets very confusing for people who don't know enough about the technicalities. And I have so much compassion because I went through my own identity crisis when I found out my Vedic astrology chart was quite different from my Western chart. Mm. And I actually said to my very first Vedic teacher, I can't handle this. I'm in an identity crisis. I can't handle this. And I walked away from it. And then a few weeks later, I had to go back because this information he gave me was so accurate. I had never heard anything more accurate in my life. And I was like, oh God, I surrender. I surrender. So, you know, I do have a lot of compassion, and it doesn't mean that Western astrology doesn't work. The thing that's beautiful about Western astrology is obviously the planets are still in the same degrees from one another. And Western does this incredible aspecting work, where they look at the aspects of the planets and how the planets are interrelating. Mm. And that is very accurate. And again, that's all transiting what's happening now today in the sky. So there's some real benefits. But, you know, when we post about new moons or full moons and you look at a tropical zodiac person, it's always going to be a different sign than what I'm talking about. And it's going to be the sign ahead of what I'm talking. If I'm saying today is Pisces new moon, the tropical zodiac people are talking about an Aries new moon today. But if you feel the energy, and I just always say to people, tap into how you feel today. Do you feel like everything's kind of dreamy and like, I, you know, kind of cloud nine-ish. I just feel like I could go walk down to the beach forever and hang out at the beach. That's how you know it's in Pisces. And when you start tapping into this, the other thing I always tell people to do is on your phone, get one of those apps. Like, I'm trying to remember the one that, I have right now. It's like Skyview is the one that I use. Skyview is an app that when you actually hold your phone up to the sky, it'll tell you which planet is in which constellation at a given time. Cool. And it's because they're working accurate to the sky right now. Mm. And so then you'll start to go, oh, if I look at that and I see the moon's in Pisces, and then I go back to what Elise just posted, oh God, the moon's in Pisces. Because it's working with, and it doesn't make it better or right or wrong. It's just really easy and simple. Mm. The dot is in the constellation. Easy. Done. Yeah.
Very cool. Okay. Thank you for that confirmation. So yeah, that's very interesting. I can imagine I might go through an identity crisis also.
A lot of people do. And I always say to them, I'm bilingual. I read Western and Eastern charts. So I can read both, but I'm telling you, I just feel most like I'm giving the person the best reading possible when I stick to the Vedic. Yeah. But I do understand the identity crisis and I have compassion for it and I've been through it. So I get it.
Yeah, totally. Oh my goodness. So then in working with this, the moon, regardless, I guess, of sign, yes. What are the benefits? How does one best harness this energy? I guess today we're on the new moon, but anytime during the cycle.
Sure. So new moons are when the moon is dark. And if you think about what it looks like in the sky, it's actually a conjunction. We've got the sun and the moon conjunct. So we say the lovers are together, right? They're lovers and they come together on the new moon. And so it's dark and the light's out and they're having their good old time. Okay? But leave them be. But if you think about what the meaning of this, it's like a seed in the dark soil and it's quickening and it's getting ready to sprout. So this is the time for new beginnings, right? And we get a new beginning every month at the new moon, 12 of them a year. So this is the time to start new projects at, you know, the dark, when the moon is what we call waning or getting darker from the full moon, it's not a time to start something new. New moons are the time to start something new. So it's really easy to remember, right? Today is a day for new regimens to be put into place, whatever that may be. You know, for a new moon in Pisces, it's really good for things like spiritual practices, creative practices. Next new moon will be Aries, really important for anything that requires physical body movement and lots of like kind of energy and effort and things that can be done quickly. This month is very much about this smooth moving creativity, allowing things to channel in, allowing ourselves to have clairvoyance. So, you know, we start with that new moon cycle, no matter which sign. But what's important about the sign is that we at least get in tune with the element and the feeling of that sign, because then it tells us what to intend or what to do with that energy.
Oh,
right?
Oh, interesting.
Yeah. If we work with that cycle, then we actually know what to do with that energy that month. Oh. This watery energy this month. Next month will be fiery energy, right? So from there, as the moon is what we call waxing, or the light is growing on the face of the moon, that means actually that the sun and the moon are parting. The moon is what's moving faster and moving away from the sun. And the further she gets away, the more light shines on her face until they get to the point where they're opposite one another. And that's our full moon. And so then the sun is fully, he's just like in awe of her and giving her all his light. It's this beautiful romantic story about the sun, who's just the ultimate masculine, and the moon, who's the ultimate feminine. And he just shines all of his light onto her. He just praises her with every little ounce of light. And she absorbs it and says, I receive, I receive. You can adore me. So it's this beautiful energy. And then when you have that fullness, what happens is that your idea that came at the new moon is in its fullness it's in its ripening at the, sorry, in the new moon, it's ripened at the full moon. Mm. And once it's ripened, we have to take a moment to celebrate and bask in the light and go, oh, yeah, this was 2 weeks of good work. And I'm going to celebrate and enjoy. And then tomorrow it starts to wane. And then we start to reflect. So what worked and what didn't work? What would I change? Do I drop this project? Do I keep going? What do I tweak? So it's like a cycle of growth and then weeding, you know?
Yeah.
So when you take care of a garden, you know this, because if you just let everything grow, often the good stuff gets choked. So that beginning first 2 weeks is about letting the good stuff grow. And then the second half is all about weeding the garden and making room for more growth.
Interesting. So then do you recommend or suggest that intentions should be able to be, one should be able to see some kind of result in 2 weeks from setting it?
Now that's a great question. So each new cycle, we're working with a new energy, but how that plays out is often a matter of what type of intention we're working with. Because if an intention is something like to start a new health regime, let's say we're going to eat whole organic foods this month, right? If you've started and you've committed for 2 weeks, you're like, you really have a good idea how things are going in those 2 weeks. Mm-hmm. And at that point of fullness, you can start to assess, you know, it's not really not working for me to eat item A. I'm going to remove that and I'm going to keep going and see how things are. But if you're really sloppy, you know, let's face it, sometimes we put out an intention then we don't do it. And those 2 weeks are sloppy and you're not really committed. Chances are you don't really have a good idea by the full moon whether or not this is working. Now, if it's a really big project, like starting a brand new business, and you know, we know most businesses take 3 to 5 years to establish themselves. Yeah, one moon cycle is not enough. But I wouldn't want to start a new business on a waxing moon. I wouldn't be looking to start it as the moon's darkening. I'd be looking for the opportunity to start it with a new moon, you know?
Gotcha.
Or new parts of a business, you'd want to be starting with a new moon. And it's a really good thing to assess. Also, I always say start small with your intentions because you get to watch them. Do little things about your own personal regimes. Oh, I'm going to start a meditation practice. You know, that's something great to start right now. I'm going to start reading the sacred text. Oh, that's a great thing to start right now. It's in Pisces. I'm going to start a dream journal, right? These are the kind of intentions you want to start. Today, putting on the pressure of, oh my God, it's a new moon. I need to, you know, begin, I don't know, I'm going to buy a house because it's a new moon. It's like, calm down, not no. Let's plan on that. How long is that going to take to save for? So we have to look at the size of the intention, the size of the idea, and then work from there.
Okay. Yeah, perfect. And then in terms of the cyclical nature of the moon, so obviously we as humans, we are affected, right, by this cyclical nature. And for women who are menstruating, oftentimes, well, maybe not often, for some people, their cycle moves with the moon.
That's right. Yeah.
And so I was wondering your thoughts on, so I've been introduced to the two terms, the white cycle and the red cycle. The white cycle where a woman ovulates with the full moon and bleeds with the new moon.
Mm-hmm.
And then the red cycle is the opposite.
Yeah.
Yes. And so with the white cycle, it seems as though the energies kind of align with that of the moon in that we're coming inwards, like we're in on the new moon and we're in full expression on the full moon ovulation. Right. Versus on the red cycle, it might be a little bit more confusing for women to kind of tune into which energies they should. I don't mean to use that word. I guess they could be tuning into. I was just wondering if you have any thoughts on that.
Well, it's an interesting thought. I think, you know, there was a time when women lived in community together and we didn't have any external hormonal influences. You know, we didn't have unnatural light beaming in on us all the time. And that really affects our menstrual cycles. Even a tiny LED light on in your room at night is affecting your menstrual cycle. I promise you that. Mm-hmm. And the other thing is we have all these birth control pills, and some people are taking it for birth control. Some people are taking it for their skin. Some people are taking it to help reduce cramping. There's all different reasons to take it. And that really throws off the cycle. And so women will find they're on a spectrum. They might not even be close to menstruating with a full or a new moon. They might be all over the place. And then it also depends on whether you skip a day and then you take the pill again another day. And so we're at a time where we're very erratic, and it's actually quite symbolic of where we're at as a species, because mm-hmm. women once cycled together, you know, and now we're cycling all over the place. And don't we see that, you know, more and more, I love to think that women are coming together and doing things like this, and bringing our medicines back and bringing them alive and sharing them with each other. But let's face it, there is a whole other world of Instagram where it's just all about, you know, competition and who looks better in a bathing suit. And, you know, I think this all kind of just, it's not to judge where we're at in a cycle. You can't do it right or wrong. It just is what it is. But I do encourage women, no matter where they're at with their cycle, just watch the moon. Get in touch with her. Whenever you can, get outside and have a look at her. And just see how you feel as you tune in. And sometimes I've even seen that women will start to shift their menstrual cycle just by that tuning in. So yeah, I mean, the ideal is said to be that you ovulate with the full moon, and it makes sense because that's where the sexual juices would be full. And that's where, if you're ovulating, it would be ideal to, you know, create a child at that moment, right? So there is something to be said for that. But I think nowadays it's just, we've got so many other pressures that I always just say to people, just let that go and just try to connect to the moon in whatever way you can, no matter where you're menstruating. And, you know, more and more women are trying to get off of these external medications as well. So that really helps. But the one thing you can do, whether you're on the pill or not, is just get all the lights off in your room, darken the room and get the dark lights, you know, the dark, what is that called? You know, when you have the blocking shades, and turn off all the LEDs, get your phone away from your head, turn it right off, turn off the computer, all of it. And this actually will help harmonize the cycle.
Interesting. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. And then, if someone is all natural, besides perhaps lights and things, I didn't even think of that. If someone's not taking a hormonal form of birth control and they are not ovulating with the full moon, do you recommend that one still looks to the moon in terms of going through their day, making those intentions and this kind of thing?
Yeah. Cool. Okay. And you'll be surprised once you start tracking how much your ovulation and how much your menstruation will shift anyways. Mm. And a lot of it is hormonal, based on sometimes foods we eat, again, external stimuli. You know, our sisters hundreds of years ago didn't have stimuli coming at them, the news constantly, and billboards and ads, and, you know, we're just bombarded everywhere we look with more stimulus. So I just think there's a lot of pressure on us nowadays. I just try to take all that pressure off and, you know, just be where you're at, and it's all good. And it will shift, though. It's amazing how it will shift, partly just because you're paying attention.
Very cool. Okay. Beautiful. Thank you.
Oh, and I'll say something else, because there are women who have moved into the most powerful form of their lifetime who are no longer menstruating and who are in their, you know, post-menstruation, what we call the crone stage, where often they are into the moon rhythm more than ever. Amazing. The stories I've been told by these women that are so connected into the moon post menses, you know, menopause is past, and other in this age of power and grace, and the moon is even more speaking to them than ever. So this is another thing to keep in mind.
Something to look forward to.
No,
beautiful. Beautiful. So then, looping back in, just into how we work with the moon, I see a lot of ritual and ceremony offered at the new moon and the full moon as a general statement. I was wondering your thoughts on whether, you know, there's other times in the cycle that are of good energy to gather with others or to be in ritual with self, or whether those are kind of the highlights or why those have been chosen, or what are your thoughts on that?
Well, I think they're the most dramatic and we notice them the most. And because our lives are so complicated nowadays and there's so much going on and we have so many things on our calendar and to-do list, I think it really comes down to, I was posting at one point about the change in the moon on every nakshatra change. So that was like, you know, not only with is there the moon changing every 2.5 days into a different sign, but then there's these lunar mansions behind the zodiac. There's 27 of those, and those change every day. So that really made me realize it's way too much. Even the changing of signs every 2.5 days, for most people, it's just overkill. It's too much to track, right? Yeah. So at least the 2 times a month are things that we can, like, oh yeah, I know the moon's dark. It's a new moon. Got it. Ah, yeah, I know that the moon is full. Okay, yeah, celebrate. Okay, got it. I think, you know, maybe the quarter moons might be something that people would be able to also, I would just say wherever you're at in your life, just be okay with it. The one thing that I do really find is important to practice, and I try to do this as much as I can, is at the very last stages of the dark moon before it hits the new moon. It's like about 2 or 3 days as it's really darkening. Just it's time just to let go a little bit, you know. Even if you work in a corporate setting, don't push people, don't, you know, try to initiate some big meeting with your kids, don't be overly disciplining. And it is actually the best time to gather with friends, have a dinner party, you know. As much as we say celebrate on the new moon, it's more celebrate the fact that you did those 2 weeks of your project, like celebrate, bask in the light. But at the end, it's really like chill out, just chill for about 3 days before the new moon starts. Because when the new moon starts, you feel the energy is like it quickens. It's quick. And the end is just kind of chill, relax, you know. And I encourage people to really go with that, those days before the new moon. Because sometimes people put pressure on themselves. The new moon's coming. I got to start something. No. Relax. When the new moon starts, you'll know what to start. Yeah. That's one area I usually say.
Yeah. Yeah. That's so interesting. So it definitely, I mean, it's a discipline, I guess. Hey, like it takes discipline to work with the moon. I've definitely experienced that in my life. You know, there's always something that could be done. And so definitely discipline. Are there any other tips, or is it just, you know, making the choice?
Well, I always say start small, because if we make our projects too big, they're just overwhelming and we're more likely to ignore them or get overwhelmed by them. And then just watch as many moons as you can. Right? Because I remember when I first started watching the moon, I'd catch a new moon here and there and I'd miss quite a few. And it was just because, you know, I had a big job and I had a kid and I was running around all over the place. And I was a homeopath. All kinds of things were happening. It's just too much. But the more that it became a part of my routine, the more it just became normal. And I think that's all we have to do, is just allow it to become normal at whatever pace is good for you. Mm-hmm. And new moons are really easy to work with in the beginning. And you don't even have to worry about the full moon or any of the other moons. Just start with the new moon, because it's really easy to track. And then as you get good at that, then, okay, now let's look at the full moon. And then as you get look at it, and then, you know, in astrology, then there's all the other influences on the moon. Then we start to look at what other planets are either conjunct the moon or influencing the moon by an opposition or some other aspect. And there's all kinds of influences that can happen. So it's just a lot of information. I never want people to feel like they need to. If it's important, And, you know, usually an instinct that you need help anyways. That's usually when I get people calling me for a reading, is they already intuitively know there's something big. Mm. So at that point, we book something beyond that. But in the beginning, just watching the moon cycle is so powerful. Mm. And you just get to know it for yourself. Oh, what does this feel like? Really tune into the feeling, because the moon is our feeling nature. It's our mothering. It's our nurturing. It's that energy that we feel when you see a kitty or a little puppy and you, that nurturing energy comes in. Men get this too. It's not just women. That is the moon in action. Mm-hmm. If you coo over a baby, that is the moon in action. If you want to make a meal for everybody and, you know, make sure everyone's got a cup of tea, that's the moon. These things that are nurturing, giving and emotional and ebbing and flowing, these are the moon. So we have to tune into the feeling more than the intellect when the moon is at play. Mm. Yeah.
Gotcha. Okay. Yeah, totally. And then in terms of, so you mentioned these additional factors and I must admit, yeah, it's beyond my capacity to hold all of this information. But could you tell us a little bit more about how, you know, conjunction or how those moving planets work, how they affect?
For sure. Yeah. So we've got these planets that we're familiar with in the solar system. And, you know, we have to keep it simple, because I'm sure if we keep exploring, there's going to be more and more and more and more. And even with the planets that we can see with the naked eye, it's a lot. And with the naked eye, we can see up to Saturn. So in Vedic astrology, you know, all the calculations, by the way, 4,000 years of calculations, and they're still true today. Like nothing has changed. That's how our ancients were just so brilliant. They were in a different time, but, you know, it was just so brilliant. And they knew all of this back then. So we just follow the same thing. But even, you know, just looking at those planets up to Saturn, there's a lot of information. And what happens is as they all move around at different speeds, they move into a connection with each other. Just like we do when we're walking down the street, I often notice, oh, look, we're about to have a stellium, a whole bunch of people merging together. I'm like, oh, here we go. Or, oh, there's a conjunction, me and this one other people, one other person just seem to be in the same spot. And I always tell people, tune into how it feels. How does it feel when someone's in your space? If it's someone you really like, you love it, you might want to reach out and embrace them. But if it's somebody you're uncomfortable with, you might want to tighten up and back off. So, you know, if Saturn comes into touch with a planet that she's uncomfortable, sorry, I meant to say the moon, if she comes into touch with somebody that she's a bit uncomfortable with, the energies are not quite congruent, you'll feel that. So, you know, something like Saturn, which puts a lot of stress and pressure onto the feeling nature of the moon, you can imagine the feelings get uptight, they get a little bit fluttery, the shallowing breathe, you know, it's just that feeling of I'm uncomfortable. Mm. Whereas someone that comes around like Jupiter, Jupiter's expansive, benevolent, it's all about children and higher wisdom and learning. And the moon just feels like, oh, I love this expansiveness and this nurturing. I can nurture this feeling here that I have of this expansive wisdom. So, you know, it's all about what the nature of the two planets are like. Mm. And that gets more and more complex in a reading. But, you know, we can feel the energies. Like Mars and Jupiter were just together. Mm. And they're quite friendly to each other. And Mars is what we want to fight for, and where Jupiter is what we want to believe in. So it's a time when we will fight for our beliefs. You know, this is what I think is right, and I'm going to fight for it. So these are the ways we look at conjunctions. And then, you know, there's all other ways that they can interplay, but that kind of gives you an idea. It's like, it's just how we feel when we're in somebody's house or close by to somebody, how we feel about them. It's the same thing with the planets in the sky.
Huh. Beautiful. Yeah. Oh, I love that. Yeah. That mental picture is really perfect. I see that. And then what now? I'm not sure if this has to do with the moon, so you'll have to help me with this. Mercury retrograde.
Yes.
This concept that I see splattered over the internet.
Everyone loves it. Loves it.
I don't understand. I've seen it and I have had a resistance to buying into what I'm reading online. So I'm wondering whether you can tell me a bit about it from your perspective.
So all retrograde means is that from our perspective on Earth, in the sky, it looks like the planet is moving backwards. It's normally moving in this forward direction, and all of a sudden it appears to be moving backwards. It's not actually in the solar system moving that way, but it's an appearance based on where we are in space. And it's actually at the time when that planet is closest to the Earth. So it's actually in its most powerful position. We feel it the most. Okay. So it does have quite an effect, and I think that's why as a collective we react to it. And what Mercury retrograde does is, so Mercury itself is it's the speech giver, it's planet of communication, it's the planet of deep skills, it's the part of us that is curious to find out about each other. Oh, I want to know about you. Tell me more about you. Who are you? It's the one that wants to go and not necessarily research deeply, but gather more information. So when it appears to go backwards, it's kind of like if you're along in a car and you're going a bit faster and the other car is going a bit slower, they look like they're appearing to go backwards as well. It's similar to that. It's very close proximity, but it's going out of your sight, basically. And what it's actually calling us to do is to go inward and reflect. And what happens is we get frustrated because things break down. Communication breaks down during that time. We send emails to wrong people. Computers go glitchy. Wi-Fi goes all over the place. Again, sketchy Wi-Fi. People are, you know, constantly needing help with their cell phones. And what it is it's actually a time where we're to drop all of the go, 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 and go inward. It's one of the best times for writing, like really reflective writing. It's one of the best times for learning, one of the best times for study. But it's not a great time to sign contracts, especially if we're in a rush. It's not a time to read the fine print unless we're willing to read the fine print with a fine-tooth comb, so to speak, and to really take our time. One of my first teachers said to me, every time there's a Mercury retrograde, you read the contract 3 times. Read the email 3 times. Read your email before you send 3 times. And what that is about be very mindful not to be quick in this time. Slow down. Remember, the planet looks like it's slowing down. We need to slow down.
Okay.
And then when you work with it that way, it's not this thing that just consumes that. Oh, it's Mercury retrograde. And I always say this too. Mercury retrograde takes the blame every time. Hey,
yeah, oh, it seems Mercury to.
And we throw this concept around, but it's like, it's so bad because really it's such a beautiful power. If we used it properly, it's a very powerful time. It's actually one of the best times for inward communication. Go in, look at yourself. Oh, how am I communicating? Am I in my truth? Am I sharing my greatest ideas, or am I just gossiping? How am I in this world? That's what it's really calling us to do.
Oh, beautiful. Okay, so then when I'm trying to plan my life, where do I go? Like, I mean, I'm so grateful that you post on your social media about things. Yeah. Is there like, is there a resource that one can go to on social media?
Well, let's see. You know, I often go to be honest with you, to just astronomical sites to see when things are happening. You know, the best, again, I'm looking at the live sky, but even that in terms of constellation, but even a Western astrologer will look at the same dates for retrogrades and things like that. So as long as you Google astronomically, meaning what's the actual physical planet doing in the physical sky according to NASA or someone like that, you can find all those dates for eclipses, for retrogrades, and you can plot out your life that way. I do love using retrogrades for things like taking courses. A lot of, you know, teachers, especially astrological teachers, they will look for the perfect time to teach a course. When things will be in harmony, when it will be safe for people to travel. They say things like Mercury retrograde, don't travel. Well, it's impossible nowadays in our lives, except for when you're in quarantine. But, but you know, it's impossible not to travel. What I usually say things like that, well, just be very mindful when you travel, because there's a chance you'll forget a passport or a travel document, or there'll be delays. Mm. Often you'll see travel delays during something like a Mercury retrograde. So, you know, yeah, it's not great to travel because you might hit delays, but if you give yourself lots of time and you're not rushing around, then it will probably be fine.
Okay.
So you can do those astronomical resources, plot it out in your calendar, and then go accordingly. Okay. Yeah.
Beautiful. And is there anything else in terms of somebody who's just coming into this amazing resource? Is there anything else that you would recommend looking into or touching on, or is this a great place to start? What do you think?
Well, I think in the beginning, the best thing to do is to have your chart read. Or if you're more inclined to look online, to, you know, you could, there's all kinds of free chart makers out there. You can just Google that too. And there's, you can make your own chart online. But I do find having an initial reading to get to know the basics, and then, you know, you can go on and read and explore and a bit like that. But the key thing is really practice. And this is true, you know, with anything. You can go take a yoga class, but if you don't practice regularly, it's really nothing. You can meditate one day, take a meditation course on a weekend, but if you don't practice the meditation daily. So I always recommend people start with small things that they can give themselves, like 15 minutes a day, you know. So something like following the moon, that 15 minutes can be go outside and look at the moon. It can be, you know, find out where the moon is today. Is it new or full or what have you? But very small little nuggets. And the moon is a good place to start because we can really feel what's happening and then connect in. In a Vedic astrology reading, the most important things are what we call the lagna or the ascendant. What was rising in the east at that moment of your birth? What constellation and what planets might be there in that moment of birth? This is really important. The next thing is the moon, and then the next thing after that is the sun. So in horoscopic Western astrology that we grew up with, we would know each other by our sun signs. You know, you would know me because I'm a Pisces, and I am a Pisces sun. But you don't see Pisces sun necessarily right away because my ascendant is Leo. Mm-hmm. And so the ascendant is what you meet first in the world and how I express my true path. Right. And then the moon will show you how I fluctuate in my emotions and how I can stay grounded and how I can come out of grounding. Right. It'll show me all that. So those three things are the next things to get to know about yourself. Mm. You know, following the moon is getting to know where the moon cycle is and how it feels in my body. But when I get to know my chart, I really want to know my lagna, my rising sign or ascendant is another word, my moon and my sun. And those three things alone, you can know so much about how to live your life.
Interesting. So what does a reading look like? So say I hope to have my chart read with you, my birth chart. What does that entail? What kind of information do you need and how does that work?
So what I need is your birth date and the exact time of birth. And most people find a resource to get that, either mom or some kind of a hospital document or a birth chart. Sometimes those baby books that mom put together or somebody in our family put together for us. But if you don't have an exact time, we need to talk because there's other ways around it. But the exact time actually lays out a map, not only of that day and your personality, but of your life. Like we can actually look at the timing of your life and tell you times to do certain things. what's so priceless about Vedic astrology is that, you know, you might be putting all the efforts in the world right now to get a business started. And I'll look at the chart and be like, this isn't the time. You need another year. In a year from now, it's going to be the time. Or you might be desperately trying to find a relationship and everyone you meet doesn't work. Or I can tell you right now, this is why. These are the planets. This is what they're urging you to do. Once you complete this, this is the time period that the relationship comes. So the timing, it's not about telling you what to do or dictating, or it's got nothing. It's just knowing what energies are alive so that you can work with them and you're not resisting them. So many times we're resisting natural energies that are just there to support and give. So that's a beautiful part about the chart reading, is that with that actual birth time, we can tell you those things. But if you don't have the exact time, there's other ways around it we can work with. And then the other thing is the place of birth, because obviously if you're born in India, you're born in Australia, you're born in Canada, and even whatever time zone in Canada, it's going to affect. We need to know the exact place that you were born.
Okay.
So sometimes people don't have that, you know, especially if they're adopted or sometimes we have to go on a bit of a hunt. And so if that ever comes up, that's something we can talk about how to find these things. Okay. And then from there, we look at, like I said, the lagna or the rising sign, what was rising in the eastern horizon at the moment of your breath. And then we read the entire chart, everything unfolds from that moment.
Mm.
So beautiful.
It's
actually this map from that first breath. And then, you know, we look at how the life unfolds, because in a birth chart, there are all the constellations. There's 12. And so all 12 constellations are a part of us. So you see, when we just identify with the sun sign, we're missing out on 11 other parts about ourselves.
Mm.
So they all get incorporated. It's just, how do we play it out? You know, what, like, we play out our career house in one sign, in one theme or feeling, but we play out our family life in another theme or feeling.
Mm.
We play out, you know, our fears, the place of fear and mystery, we play that out in another way. And everyone's is different, right? So it's really beautiful to explore. And it's really about just offering the language of the planets. There's no real advice, because it's just knowing what energy is there, and then that person is able to work with that energy or not. Most people recognize it right away. They go, oh yeah, that's totally me. Often there's parts of ourselves we've repressed because others maybe didn't accept it, but we find out, no, this is a critical part about you. Mm. Resurrect that. And that can be quite liberating.
Yeah, I imagine.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Beautiful. Yeah.
Often there's hidden talents, hidden insights in the chart that we've had a knowing of, but maybe never brought into fruition. That's another beautiful thing that comes up.
Mm. Lovely. Okay. Yeah. Beautiful. Beautiful. Okay. I have one last question.
Sure.
So this podcast is all about, you know, finding ways to nourish our inner sanctuary, coming back home to ourselves, learning about ourselves, just like this beautiful topic of astrology kind of brings us insights into this. And I was wondering, aside from astrology, is there a practice, a modality, a ritual that you work mm-hmm. with in your personal life to do this, something that might bring insight to someone else?
Connected to astrology or just any other modality?
Any other.
Okay. So I've been walking with a dear sister of mine, Angela Prider, and she's at West Coast Shamanic. I've been walking with her for quite some time as her student, as an apprentice, as a co-facilitator, all in many, many walks. But this whole realm of shamanic practices, or the word shaman, shamanism, really what it is earth medicine. It's just using the connection that we have with the earth and bringing that ritual back. So I would say these types of practices, I keep an altar that is very precious to me. And I interact with daily. I'm a Mesa medicine hearth carrier. And I work with those living energies on a regular basis. And cacao ceremony is just priceless to me, but other ceremonies as well. It doesn't have to entail cacao, but cacao is just so nourishing to the heart. And it's just something so beautiful that Angela and I have been sharing. And, you know, one of the things that I think is easy for anybody to incorporate in daily life, just to get back into the rhythm of being connected and in gratitude with the earth, is to give offerings. And I actually recommend this with astrology as well. To find things from nature that are biodegradable that we can gift to the earth. You know, often things like sacred tobacco or white sage or corn, roses. Rose is a big medicine for me, so I often gift roses to the earth. And, you know, it can be anything though, whatever calls to you. If you come from a lineage of people where a certain grain or certain spice is really important to you and your people, bringing offerings to the earth and giving it a little prayer and then offering it up is one of the most beautiful practices that just brings us into connection immediately. It's one of the most beautiful things I've ever learned and continue to give. I just didn't have that kind of knowing as a young person growing up. I didn't know we were supposed to do that. And now it's almost like I can't imagine living without it. And so there's always this, you know, reciprocity that we can experience if we're gifting things to the earth. And then we start to realize, oh my gosh, like I haven't been very generous in my life. Like I always think about what I'm going to get. Now I'm thinking about what I'm going to give. It'd be a really beautiful little practice.
Yes. Oh, that's so interesting that you bring that up, because I have, when I began my cacao practice, that was the first time I started offering. And it was quite a powerful realization. And I'm wondering, so when you do your offerings, is it in a particular place in nature? Is it anywhere? Does it depend?
No. One thing I'll say is just be very careful that it can't harm anybody. So yes. I always think I love to gift chocolate and cacao, but the little puppies, the little doggies can't do chocolate. So I don't gift chocolate, even though I'd love to. But yeah, it's a great question. There are some really important places in nature for me that I can walk to in a heartbeat. If it's around your home, it's really important, because if you can work with the energies close to your home, it's beautiful. But anywhere, if I'm traveling to a new place, I introduce myself. I'm like, hi, my name's Elise. I'm a Leo rising with a pipe. No, I'm kidding. I do this little introduction with all my heart, like really saying, hi, thanks for having me. And I'll bring that gift. And when I'm leaving Canada, I often bring something like cedar leaves, because it's just so part of my home. I'm sitting right by a cedar tree. But yeah, it could be anywhere. I don't think we have to worry about it. If you spontaneously realize that you have an apple in your backpack and you want to give it to the ocean, just give it, you know, with all your heart. And yeah, I don't think we have to worry too much about gifts. Just give them. As long as they're from the heart, that's the most beautiful thing.
Thank you. That's so beautiful. Thank you so much. I so appreciate you joining us and for sharing just your wealth of knowledge. So appreciated.
I love what you're doing, Tara. Thank you for bringing people the information and making it possible for us to share.
Thank you.
You.
Thank you. Namaste.
Namaste. Sat Nam.
Sat Nam.
I am so grateful to have had this opportunity to speak with Elise and to share in her passion about all that happens in the sky above us. Since recording this, I have actually had the pleasure of receiving a natal chart reading from Elise, and it honestly was truly illuminating. I look forward to delving more deeply into my chart, and it's definitely an amazing tool. I would recommend it to anyone who is interested. Please make sure that you go check out Elise on both Facebook and Instagram. Her handle is @earthandskyway. And let me know, how are you enjoying these episodes so far?
Do you have someone who you want to hear in this space, or do you have questions that you are looking to have answered? Please connect with me on social media. All of the handles are in the show notes. I am sending you so much love, and I will see you next week. Namaste.